Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Today, we're going to go across the status spectrum. We're going to find out what it's really like to be a waitress in a rather unusual way. I will just tease that and not tell you. I will have a special guest to give us true insight into what it's really like to be a waitress. We're also going to span to the other end of the status spectrum. There's an amazing biography of a true genius, perhaps the father of artificial intelligence, and that biography offers a lot of lessons for us, regular folks. But I want to start by reading you an excerpt from a new book called Winning at Following. And, you know, I get all these career books all the time, these workplace books, and it's all really is old wine in new bottles for the most part. But this is something I hadn't thought about, and here is the excerpt. It's in praise of being a follower, not a leader, a follower. Followership is underrated. Unlike leaders, followers are protected from the hell of disgruntled and malcontented workers who complain about everything. Colleagues, assignments, pay, performance evaluations, lack of recognition, denial of promotions, failure to be consulted, and simply not getting their way. Followers are freed from saying no to people they genuinely care about and to people who will forever hold it against them. Followers are free from being a referee between battling factions or from rendering judgments that create winners and losers. Followers are liberated from having to fire employees and can dodge conflicts and problems that leaders are forced to address. I hadn't really thought about it. You know, I guess I had gotten sucked into the American way where, you know, up is the way, leadership. We all should be aspiring upward. But when I really think of some of the more contented people I know, they are the followers. They may be leaders in their families or in their avocational life. But I guess there's a lot that can be said for a life when you're a good individual contributor and not a leader. So I was very taken by that. Again, that's from Norman Baldwin's new book, Winning at Following. But I'd like to get your reactions. If you are a follower, would you like to defend it for us here? Would you like to say, oh, yeah, it's way overrated in the real world? That's just another how-to book author. He's clueless, doesn't begin to understand the oppression of the follower. All I care about is your honest self-reportage, or self-reporting if we don't want to be so pompous about it. So if you're a follower, I particularly welcome your call here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, as promised, really skittering all the way up to the other end of the status continuum, another new book is called A Mind at Play by Rob Goodwin and Jimmy Soney. And for the last 5 years, the co-authors essentially lived with one of the most brilliant people on the planet, a guy named Claude Shannon. Never heard of. He's the most important genius you never heard of. And his intellect is deemed as on par with an Einstein and Isaac Newton. And the biography teaches us a number of lessons about how we can better live our own lives. But first, let's go to the phones and let's see what hopefully we have a follower on the line who's going to defend or decry followerhood, if that is a word. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Am I on the air?
You are.
Hello?
Hi, you are.
Okay, I'm calling because I started out my career in graduate school in science, and I worked in the sciences and engineering, and I was promoted to greater and greater positions of leadership, and every promotion made the job more difficult. I liked it less. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I just bailed out, and I became a fitness trainer.
Mm.
And I've been doing it for 25 years. I find it extremely rewarding, and I have decided that I just want to work with the end users. I want to work directly with my students. I don't want to teach other people to be exercise teachers or fitness trainers. And so I'm not trying to promote myself into a position of leadership. I'm just trying to develop my craft, and I feel very satisfied by that.
That makes such perfect sense to me, especially in the academic world. Actually, I've seen many professor types refuse promotion to department chair or associate dean or whatever, because then you're just, you know, you went to get a PhD either to do research and or to be a teacher, and now if you're an administrator, you're a pencil pusher. And yeah. But it takes a lot of courage. We live in a society that is extolling of leadership and status, that to say screw the status, I'm going to care more about being closer to the action.
Not only do you sacrifice status, but you sacrifice monetary reward as well by making those choices.
To some extent, but you know, with the tax rate being so progressive, we don't think of it as a but it really is. The additional income that one makes for being a manager or a leader is taxed at roughly 50%, especially in California, where it's the highest state income tax, and very, you know, it's 11.3% just state income tax if you're above a certain bracket. You really don't get to keep very much. So it becomes almost a trivial factor being a really good individual contributor versus being a manager. Of course, if you're the
Obamacare helps.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thank you. There was somebody wanted a clarification. Of course, I mean by a follower, not somebody who aspires to be a leader, but somebody who is like our caller, somebody who says, I don't mind having a manager, a boss, leaders. I want to be somebody who's following. I'm going to be an individual contributor. Anyway, one more time, I'll give out the phone number if there is another person who... is there another person on the line who wants to... Yeah, okay. Let's take one more call about this. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Is that me?
It is.
Oh, well, Marty, I didn't have a question about being a leader or a follower, but about going into a career in the environmental field.
Happy to help you. That's what we call, for those of you just joining us, that's what's called a workover. I'm happy to help you try to take a next step forward in your career. So tell me a little bit about your situation.
Well, it's actually my fiance who is studying at Sonoma State University and studying environmental science in general, right, conservation and restoration, and wanting to get a graduate degree, but of course with the way things are going with the current political situation, it's not looking too good. But what, I mean, I was looking at environmental engineering as a possibility. Are there other, I mean, as you say, there's off-the-radar careers, such as like working in a sanitary wastewater plant would be a environmental career that's off the radar.
Yep.
But what other types of things do you have?
Well, tell me a little bit more about how technical you're absolutely right. There is, you know, we in the Bay Area, environmentalism has been well recognized. It's like a religion. It's like everybody is, you know, ask your cab driver, what do you believe in? And it's not so much Christianity or even Buddhism, it's environmentalism. So everybody's an environmentalist, but too often the colleges train you to be a placard waver but not have the hard science. I was delighted that you said that she is a environmental science major. How technical is she?
She's good at math.
Okay.
I don't know about technical, but she's very, you know, very functional, as in if there's a task that needs to be done, it's quite easy for her to pick it up and just get it done.
What, just tasks in general? Are we talking about, you know, like if it was a task that required me to be an engineering type and fix something, I'd fail miserably. But if it's a word or simply an intellectual rigor problem, I can solve that. What are the kind of problems that she naturally solves well?
Well, she's good. I don't know if it's really problems, but her main interest, I think, is more in the interaction with people.
That's what I was afraid of, correct? Because, again, that's not technical. That's the soft stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's so many environmentalists here, the ones who get jobs that are not volunteer, the ones who are good people skills, they're detail-oriented, they're organized, they get volunteer jobs. They get internships. Yeah. They don't get jobs. The people who, you know, and of course, every generalization has got many exceptions. But in general, since she sounds like she's just starting out, you know, the fact is, you know, it is, you've got to have some rigor, especially in a field that is so, like I said, everybody's an environmentalist here. So is she good enough in what does she care about on the science-y side, not the people's talking side? I mean, is there something, or is she going to be like the people type? They end up being salespeople, so they end up selling pollution control equipment or commercial solar installations or whatever. Is she that kind of person, or is she more scientific than that?
She's more, you know, one thing that's coming to mind is ecology. Essentially, I don't know if that's too broad.
Yeah, it's very broad. I mean, that's what environmentalism is. It's preserving the ecology. So she's sounding pretty general. What? I guess I'll just try to brainstorm what comes to mind that is not too sciencey and is somewhat people-y.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's at Sonoma State, she's also not going to compete for the jobs at the premier company because she's not at Stanford or Berkeley, or she's at Sonoma State. Does she want to stay local? Let's start there.
Well, she's thinking about going to Hawaii for grad school, and I think she does want to come back to California for a job.
Her going to Hawaii, and again, Hawaii's employment is even notoriously different. How motivated is she to have a real career, given that I'm just wondering about that, and the fact that you're calling and not she. How strong is her motivation to prevail in a competitive environment?
It's pretty motivated.
Okay.
She has a high degree of motivation just to get to work and fulfill the day, so to speak.
Okay.
Get all of her tasks done, and I'm surprised because I don't even have that level of motivation.
Okay, great. Okay, so does she care more about, does it matter to her whether it's, you know, we're talking about environment, water, air, what does she care about, if anything that's particular? Is she, you know, an outside nature person? Is she more an anti-corporate person, which is really at the core of a lot of environmentalism? What is her root value?
It's education, wildlife, and water. Kids.
Education, kids. Okay. So, you know, again, I'm seeing the schools being much more activist than they ever were. If she's about people and kids and water and the general environment and ecology, now she's sounding like a teacher who infuses a lot of environmentalism into her educating of students. If I said that she should focus, and Sonoma State has a well-regarded teacher education program, and teaching jobs cannot be offshored and are not unduly technical. If I said she should, she's looking for grad school. If I said she should go for a master's in education, and in her electives, perhaps there is a course, and Sonoma State, again, is a big environmentalist school, she should go for her teaching credential, in her electives, take something in environmental ed, and then with her careers, and she likes kids and likes people, she should become a teacher. And there's one of your last bastions of job security in this era of temp part-time stuff. What do you think about that?
That's pretty good.
Okay.
That's pretty good. I never thought of that idea.
There we go. I'll quit while I'm ahead. All our lines are lighted up, so I will thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Take care and be well. Let's just go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
I was just responding to the earlier...
Wonderful. Yeah, for those who are just joining us, I was extolling the benefits of being somebody who's a follower, an individual contributor who doesn't aspire to leadership, that it's in many ways smarter. And I was inviting callers to call in with their reactions to that. And so what is yours?
So I was just responding because I work in the business world as opposed to the academic, as your first caller
great
had said. And I'm what you would call a reluctant leader, which is that I was perfectly content just doing the job to the best of my ability, mm-hmm. and through that work continue to get promoted until mm-hmm. I reached directorship.
Mm-hmm.
And as he pointed out, and as you point out, being a leader has a lot of downside mm-hmm. in terms of responsibility and time and effort.
Yep.
But I think that in our society, capitalists in particular, that we extol the virtues of leadership over, you call them followers and I call them worker bees.
Okay.
Because the only way anything gets built is through the hard work of the worker bees. Not everyone has to have the strategic vision to drive things forward. It's a combination of the two working parts to get to the end point.
Yep.
But often it's overlooked that the worker bees contribute a significant amount to get to that end goal.
Right, absolutely. But but you're also implying as correct that being a manager ain't what it's cracked up to be. There's a lot of challenges. You don't get overtime. You're paid the same whether you work 70 or where you work 30, and you often expected to work 60. You're dealing with, you're like a marionette who's got supervisees pulling at you from below, and you got managers pulling on you from above, and there's a lot, it's all the responsibilities on you. So, you know, there is also, in fairness, something unfair about the fact that here in this kind of anti-capitalist Bay Area, we tend to really treat all bosses like they're monsters. Is it
right.
fair that you think bosses are unfairly denigrated?
I don't know. I work in a small company, so it's pretty clear to see the bosses that are liked versus disliked. But what I have seen are there are some managers that their job seems to be to protecting their group, which is an admirable quality, but not if it doesn't contribute to the achievement of the end
Absolutely.
Goal. You know, if your manager role is to protect your people from taking extra work on, or even the work that is due for that department, then it's an interesting contrast between the people loving that manager because it's reducing their workload, while the rest of the team in other departments has to pick up that slack and doesn't like that manager.
That makes all the sense in the world. It reminds me actually of government, in which, you know, you hear senators and House of Representatives people talking about their constituency and what's best for them. He's protecting, or she is protecting, their constituency instead of the larger good, which is what's the best for the nation. Same
exactly.
with what you're talking about. You know, it really feels nice that the manager is protecting their work group, but it's screwing the larger, the organization and the customer
exactly.
ultimately. You are
exactly.
a great caller, and I appreciate it very much. Thanks very
Thank
much.
You.
You're
Bye.
Welcome. And I've got lots of calls on the line, but I want to prioritize. I promised you both that I was going to talk about the lessons from a genius for all of us, a true, true genius, this Claude Shannon guy, the guy who's really the father of artificial intelligence. But I want to prioritize somebody who's even more important. I also teased at the top of the show that we would take a very, let's just say, an innovative approach to figuring out what it's really like to be a waitress. As I said, we're going from across the status spectrum, from worker bee followers to super geniuses, the father of AI, to waitresses. And with me, I have somebody who's never been a waitress. But she has gotten to learn a lot about what it's really like to be a waitress in a very unusual way. Dr. Barbara Nemko, my wife and superintendent of schools, how did you learn so much about being a waitress?
Well, I had the privilege of being in a 15-minute play called Lives of the Great Waitresses. I got to be Yetta from the Bronx.
Right.
I can't imagine how they cast me that way.
Right. So I thought, and it is very revelatory of what it's really like to be a waitress. And because it's a short play, it distills so much of what it's like to be a waitress into a very short space. We're not going to do 15 minutes worth. You're going to do most of it. And you're going to do some of the parts of the waitress, and it'll be roughly 5 minutes. I have to play a little part, so she's got a foil. But Barbara, why don't you just begin?
Okay, and when you get bored, just tell me stop.
No, this is fact. I love the script. We've looked over the script, and I've heard you do it. It's terrific. Go ahead.
Okay, you either got it or you don't. If you don't, you won't ever. So don't even bother. Don't strain. Oh, there's things you can learn, sure. The fine points. The stance. Heat that up for you? Toasted? But, honey, scratch that. Make it hun. A truly great waitress is born. You get what I mean? It's a feel thing. Deep under the bones of your bones. In yourselves. Some reporter once asked Louis Armstrong what swing meant. Louis looked the guy dead in the eyeball and said, "If you gotta ask, you'll never know." He would have made a great waitress. My very first diner, we had one. Flo Kelly, a goddess in suppos. Flo was all waitress. She could fill 2 dozen shakers one-handed and never spill one grain of salt. She could carry 8 Hungry Man specials lined up on her arm like a charm bracelet. Flo could serve pie a la mode so it looked like Mount Everest topping the clouds. She poured gravy like tropical rain. In Flo's maraschino-nailed fingernails, the short-order carousel spun like the Wheel of Fortune. And never, not once, did a customer's coffee get cold. Well, I mean to tell you, that diner was hers. If Jesus himself came in and sat down to supper, he would have tipped double. Then, one blue plate special, right after the lunch rush, Flo hung up her hairnet, cashed in her checks, and went sunny side up. And that's when the Lord took my order. I knew what I was. I was called. We got us a new one today. Little blondie thing, brains like a dish rag. Marty says to me, Yetta, give her a try. What try? Way she walks into the room, I can tell you the broad ain't no waitress. She's got this 290-pound bag slung over her shoulder. You just know that it's going to be full of her face, 8x10. You know that she's going to be hawking the customers. Hi, I'm Melissa.
Our special's tonight, light cappellini with a sauce margarita.
Spaghetti and meatballs.
And a baked beef with a pork tureen.
Meatloaf.
And I want to thank my parents, my agent, and God for believing in me.
A question. Does anyone care what's the name of this person who's pouring your coffee cup? Thank you.
Oh, yeah, I'm a Gemini, Capricorn rising.
Ugh, my breakfast is rising.
The quality of mercy is not strained. Brigadoon, brigadoon.
Am I right, or am I right? Hopeless. First lunch rush, her head will be spinning around like the milkshake machine. But she bats her big blues up at Marty and tells him, yes, she's got experience. And Marty, being dense, doesn't ask her what kind. So it's up to yours truly to break the kid in. Never mind, I got migraines in both of my feet. Tammy Sue knows her ass from her elbow on good days, and Kay's going to try and convert her. So I give her the counter, okay? Let her piss off the regulars. Marty's there working the register. Maybe he'll know from experience next time around. Which I bet you good odds is the end of this shift.
Hi, can I get you some breakfast? Coffee? Is that regular meaning not decaf or regular with cream? Menus. I'm sorry. Right back.
And we're off. And it doesn't get better. Clear through to the lunch rush. She's mixing up eggs over easy, supposed to be scrambled. She's bringing the Western, the waffles. She's dropping forks right, left, and center. The decaf goes dry. Then she loses an order, a party of 6, and they walk without paying.
I'm so sorry. It's taking so long.
So I look over at Marty like, hey, get the hook, because Miss 8x10 just flunked her audition. And
now,
Marty...
Now, we stop at this, but now there's another waitress that you've got. Do the Melissa. That's,
okay.
Okay, go ahead.
This is my first day of work. Not here. Ever. My family had money, and nobody made me. I came to this city to look for a job, and nobody would hire me. It's kind of like being a virgin. I'm not anymore, but I was. And I'm telling you, nobody wants to be first. Too much pressure. My roommate said, lie. So I did. I don't want to lose this job. I know, I'm a waitress. It's not what I've dreamed of, what anyone dreams of. But I make a difference, I do. There are lives on each stool at that counter. The old man who's ordered his Sanka and shredded wheat every morning for 25 years. The woman who fought with her husband last night and treated herself to French toast with her friend who just had a mastectomy. The man who panhandled the price of his coffee. I touch them. I give them the quiet sensation that once their sad, uncontrollable lives, they wanted a small thing and got it. I brought it. I bought them a gift. And that matters. You watch me. I'm going to be brilliant. I'm going to be one of the greats.
And that was Barbara Nemco performing an excerpt from a wonderful play called The Lives of the Great Waitresses. Dear listeners, if you are a waitress, it's you who we would love to hear from now. To what extent are these excerpts about the real-life waitress real? The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we're waiting for the calls, Barbara, do you have any human reaction as you were, you know, you obviously when you're in a play, you hear these lines and say these lines a zillion times. What are your human reactions to this?
Well, I guess my first reaction is I have tremendous respect for waitresses.
Me too.
And I know it's a job
that
I could not hold for a day. I'm not sure I would make it through the lunch rush, partly because there's a lot of pressure. People want what they want, and they want it now. They don't want to wait too long. They want you to be very polite. And these days, we all want everything our own way. So the menu is sort of a suggestion. And then customers like you and me would drive me crazy. You who will ask the waitress, well, should I have, and then name seven things. How should she know what you like? I mean, if that were me, I would say, I haven't got a clue. Just pick one. It's a meal. It's not a spouse.
Yeah.
And for me, well, I want this, but could I have this on the side and make sure it doesn't have any of that in it? And oh, could I substitute the this for the that will also make me crazy. This is what's on the menu, ma'am, and choose one.
Well,
so I don't have the temperament to be a waitress.
For me,
and that's why when people are really kind to us, I just think they're wonderful.
Yeah, and for me, those who are regular listeners to the show know, you know, people who get status and money, big money, I just have greater human respect for a person who's willing to work without status, without great money, showing up, and waitress job, waiter jobs, server job these days, we have to be politically like server jobs, are nights, they're weekends. You've got to be nice no matter to rude, horrible customers. The customer's always damn right. And I am amazed. We go out to restaurants. Frankly, we eschew the very fancy restaurants because we just think it's bad value and it's a bunch of frou-frou stuff. And we spend a lot of time going to restaurants. That we went to the Front Room in Vallejo last night. A family-run small, you know, not so small, but a restaurant in Vallejo. And the waitress was so professional, so wonderful. We go to chains. We go to Olive Garden. And we are amazed, or Red Lobster. And we are amazed at how professional and kind and, you know, they have to put up with so much. They're rushing. They're on their feet all the time. I just think they're good people. And right, tell the listeners what am I like with the waitresses? Typically they're waitresses actually. What am I like with those waiters?
Well, you're very kind.
Beyond the specific,
but you're also
what do I do?
A pain.
What?
You also want them to choose for you. Last night you asked the waitress. I think you gave her seven.
Three.
That's
a lie.
Options.
Come on. I gave her three choices.
No.
I say which is the best. I said which is the prawns provençale, the drunken chicken, or whatever. Now, no, this is a side point. They're always happy because they likely get a bigger tip, and everybody wants agency, and everybody wants to have their opinion asked. Nobody resents me for asking the waitress which is what's best on the menu. Come on.
Well, they may not, but I would.
That's why you're not a waitress.
That's what I said. I can't. That's why I'm not a waitress.
You're right. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is on your mind? Hello, it's you. Hello.
My name is Rashi Abramson. I'm 23. I did not go to college. I'm very passionate about software engineering. I've been doing it for a while. I did a programming boot camp.
Oh, yeah.
I got really ill for about 4 years afterwards.
Wow.
And so I have not been able to find a job. In fact, my coding skills are okay. I've been able to go through interviews and get to the in-person interview, which is a pretty thorough screening process since I have to do a coding challenge.
Technical interviews are always tough. They're much tougher than tell me about yourself. Yeah. Right.
So, but the problem is I keep getting feedback that I don't have enough work experience because, well, I've been sick. So I'm wondering if you have any interesting insights on, you know, some novel ways to maybe gain some experience or figure out a better way to present myself.
Absolutely. A couple of things. First of all, you left ambiguous whether your sickness was caused by the stress of being in the coding boot camp, like a general assembly or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It was not. It was independent.
It was independent.
Normally, the best way to get skill is to take on a mock project by yourself or with a tutor if you want to get your skills, your experience up. You take some project that exists that is either, there are courses like from these boot camps that are...
I have many projects that I've been able to present myself. And, I think that's added to me getting the jobs. But they seem to want to have... work experience,
no,
which
then
I don't know how to get.
That's usually unfortunately, I hate to say this, but the truth is they're almost never honest with you as to why you're not getting the job. So it's very easy to say you don't have the right experience, whatever, because that's legal, but it doesn't. The fact that you've got a portfolio of projects that you've done, I'm wondering whether it's either of the following two things. Really, are your chops not good enough yet, and do you need a tutor to get your chops up, or are you interpersonally coming off bad in the interviews?
Yeah,
which one of those two? Chops, or personality?
I'm thinking maybe it's the second one. It might be the second one,
okay.
I just don't know it.
Then the best way to deal with that is to have a trusted friend who's not going to BS you, do a mock interview with you that you videotape or at least record on your phone, and you ask him or her to debrief, say, moment by moment, what is annoying you about me? What are you liking? What am I saying, and what am I, in both in tone, in voice, in substance, what are you liking? And it should be, because these are heavily technical interviews, it should be somebody who's quite technical, and let them put you through a technical interview as well as a soft skills interview, and that might get you the feedback. Because if you've got a portfolio of work that you do, then that crap about no experience is usually just employer BS to cover their butts. Does that make sense?
Okay, yes.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Let's take another call. Okay. So, I will give out the phone number one more time. If you are a waitress and you have heard our little excerpts from this great little play called Lives of the Great Waitresses that really paints a picture of what it's like to be a waitress, and you want to share your experience about what it's been like to be a waitress, for good or for bad, as long as it's for real, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And Barbara, what we had talked about doing after we finished this waitress segment, which, by the way, I thought you did a great job in acting that. That was just terrific.
Thank you.
How was my Southern accent? Bronx.
Excellent.
Jewish guy.
Southern Bronx.
Right.
That's where we're both from.
Exactly. We do. We have calls on the line, so let's just wait a moment until Joanne can get them ready, and then we'll go right to the phones, and then we'll do to let our listeners know what we had planned. Is I have this little careers values inventory. Very often, your values can help you make a career, and I thought rather than just reading it to the listeners, I would torture Barbara and read this list to her and ask her what her values are. But let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. Hopefully, you're a waitress with a real life story. Is that true or untrue?
I was a waitress for a long time, for the sake of having a prolonged adolescence.
Uh-huh.
And,
I understand.
It doesn't. Yeah, my reaction to the play, though, I thought it was awfully condescending. I mean, I think in waitressing, you get the cross-section of the population just like anywhere else. And that seemed a little, undereducated. And although I think that exists, I don't think it's the full story. And then there are all types of waitressing, too. I mean, you can have silent service, for example, where I had that done by some friends, and back in the days when you could smoke cigarettes in restaurants, no sooner would you have it up to your lips than someone would appear with a light. and then I wanted to do a tiebreaker on the recommendations. I'm with you. I think we can absolutely make recommendations about what's better. Sometimes they do a fantastic job with beef. Sometimes they can't get chicken to save their life, you know, and who would know better than the people who work there what they do really well and what they don't.
Anyway, I thank you very much for your perspective. Let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's your perspective? Hello, it's you.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Oh, sorry, I couldn't tell that I was on. Thank you. Very brief comment about waitressing. I honestly think that almost like public service, everybody needs to do waitressing or some sort of customer contact. It would be illuminating.
I think
like,
that's a good
that's
point.
What those people are like. Second, so I work for a large software company in the Bay Area, and I do technical interviews all the time, once a week. And I can tell you a couple of things that I'm looking for, if you're interested.
Sure.
One is I want to hear how they're thinking. It's not just a matter of solving the problem. And even if you're stuck, talk about your thought process, because more than anything else, I want to see someone solving a problem.
Right.
If they
their
can just
processes.
Knock out the code,
right.
Not so great.
Right.
The other thing you were saying, practice interviews, yes. And as far as experience, open source is a really
good point.
It's valuable to see, and you may have covered this on a resume thing. Resume objectives, some people don't even have them, but if you can have an objective that tells a little bit of a story.
I like all this. I love all this, and I really love the open source. There's a ton of material and problems and how they were addressed in open source. But tell me, just don't get it too much in the weeds, but tell me a little more about if you were this that caller who said, you know, he was in the usual catch-22 between, on the one hand, you know, they want more experience. The other hand, he can't get a job. He can't get experience if he doesn't have a job. How should he use open source material to help him build his portfolio and therefore demonstrate his competence and improve his competence?
Well, first of all, you need to be upfront about, A, what the project was about. Just saying, I did some database stuff for the open source blah 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 project isn't useful. It's a little bit, but saying that I worked on this open source project that does X, and I contributed this way.
Yes.
More important, very important. What difference did it make?
Right. Great.
You know,
and because I got so much I want to do on the show. I'm going to cut you short. No, it's good. I want to make sure that the listeners understand what you mean. So, if I were interviewing for the job and you gave me a technical problem. And, for example, I went to the board and I said, there are these four variables that need to be taken into account. And I'm not sure how to take care of, but there's this one, there's this one, there's this one, and this one. And first I'm going to take these pairwise, and I'm going to look at these two, and I'm going to see how might I meld those into some elegant code. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Well, actually, first I want to see if there's any uncertainty in the problem or any variables that you can see, bring them up front.
Great.
Say, okay, I want to clarify this.
Great.
It shows your thinking,
right?
And it can keep you from screwing up and solving the wrong problem.
Good point.
If you have a problem, if you see that I could do it this way or I could do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do, the simple stupid algorithm first, because it might be good enough for small problems.
Right.
And that's fine. And then they'll want to scale. Something like this. They want, okay, can you do that better?
Perfect. This gives
as long as you tell them what you're doing and why you're doing it. This tells so much more than just knocking out the code.
This gives us a great window. I really appreciate your call. You're an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemko workforce. Thank you so much for calling the show.
I will say, doing interviews once a week gets tiring.
Of course. Well, why is that
it
tiring?
In the same way that the interviewee is on, if you know what I mean.
Yes, of course.
Really need to be on the stage, up. I have to be similarly alert in a very different way.
Right.
I type everything.
Really?
So, because I can't remember, you know, some people like, oh, they take a picture of the code on the board. It's like, it doesn't say how it got there. And, you know, that's the typing, that transcript is the basis for my feedback.
Wow.
Second, I spend about 50% or 100% more time on writing feedback than doing the interview.
Wow.
And frankly, I really dislike the time it takes away from my coding.
Of course.
I have to do it. And being a nerd, kind of that kind of person, I have to do a good job.
Yeah,
and I feel obliged.
You sound like an ace nerd, boy. You've just passed my interview. If I were interviewing you for a job, I'd really be seriously considering you. You sound like an excellent person. Thank you so much for calling the show.
You're very welcome. Bye.
Okay. Barb, let's do our little thing as promised, the career values thing, and then I'll let you off because I know you want to get off.
I have to get finished packing.
Right. Okay. So, it's easy to assume that, you know, your values are like most people, you know, be ethical, make a contribution, have work-life balance, but people's values vary much more than you might think. And so I've created this little self-assessment inventory to help you, my dear listeners, home in on the sort of career or job you want. It also may help you decide whether you want to stay in your current position or not. So here are some of these attributes, and they're mainly values, but they overlap with abilities too, I guess. So, but anyway, first one, and you just simply say, why don't you, for simplicity on the radio, just say, yeah, I really would like to have this in my job, or I don't want to have this in my job, okay, or I don't care, all right?
Okay.
So, co-workers who are mainly Democrats or socialists, before I have to explain that, research has been pretty clear that political affinity is a surprisingly important factor in job satisfaction. It's a very important value. So, co-workers who are mainly Democrats or socialists, is that a must-have, must-not-have, or don't care?
Don't care.
Co-workers who, on the conversely, co-workers who are mainly Republicans or Libertarians, must-have, don't-want-to-have, or don't care?
Don't care.
Much of the workday is spent with highly intelligent people. Must-have, don't-want-to-have, don't care?
Want-to-have.
Much of the workday is spent in teamwork and meetings rather than in solo work. Must have, don't want to have, don't care.
Tough one. I'm going to go with don't care.
Okay. So, dear listeners, by the way.
Really, I want to mix.
Okay, great. So, dear listeners, again, I'm doing this with Barbara so that it's not just me talking, but, you know, play the game. Simply mark down the ones that are really important to you. That's probably as much as on a Sunday morning I'm going to ask you to do. Pick out, this is like a master list of values. Maybe if you could come up with three or four or five that end up being, you know, non-negotiables for you, that could be very helpful to you in pitching yourself as you describe what kind of job you're looking for or whether you want to leave. Okay, next one. Where you spend much of the workday with artsy people. Must have, don't want to have, indifferent.
Don't want to have.
Okay. Much of the workday with business-like people. Must have, don't want to have, not critical either way.
Not critical either way.
Okay. Co-workers who dress in professional attire. Must have, don't want to have, don't care either way.
Would prefer, but it's not a must have.
Okay. A workplace culture that's social, even if that detracts from productivity. Must have, don't care either way.
Don't want to have.
Okay. Now we turn to where questions. Employed by a large company. Must have, don't want to have, don't care very much. Large organization, could be a nonprofit or a government agency too. Large organization.
I probably like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Small organization. Must have, don't want to have, either way.
Don't care.
Employed by a nonprofit. Must have, don't want to have, either, on the fence.
Don't care. I guess I've always worked for a nonprofit.
Well, government. So I have a separate question for government, but not. I'm talking about a
nonprofit. Okay, then nonprofit. Don't care.
Okay, working for the government. Must have. Don't want it. Or on the fence.
Yeah, that's kind of a must have.
Okay,
I like that.
Why?
I'm afraid if I worked for a profit-making corporation, the value of profit may supersede the value of whatever it is that we're doing. Where when you work for the government, you're not doing it because you're going to get any personal profit. You're doing it because you love what you're doing, well, hopefully.
Okay.
Or you believe in the cause or whatever.
Back to our career values. Your work being in a particular location, like, you know, by the water or in an office as opposed to a school, a home versus outdoors, small town?
No, location is a must-have, not necessarily because it's very nice if you happen to work near the water, but because the travel to the work.
Right, commute is getting
is
crazy.
Critical. That can ruin it.
Yeah, commute has changed. It used to be a non-critical factor, but here in the Bay Area especially, because the powers that be of want to get us out of our cars no matter what, it becomes a major factor for most people. I just heard yesterday of somebody who has to commute from this is unbelievable, commute from Fresno to San Francisco. And the real punchline,
wait
to hear the punchline. You know what it's to do? Be an Uber driver. He commutes from Fresno to San Francisco to be an Uber driver.
Oh, my God,
stays with three or four because he can't get a job that pays as well. He makes a few hundred dollars a day working for Uber. And then he stays four nights, and then he goes back for the weekend to Fresno.
I guess you can't make any money being an Uber driver in Fresno.
Right, there isn't enough people wanting it and couldn't afford Ubers. Anyway, okay, back to our values. Must have, don't want to have, either way, which is employed in a specific city. Must have, don't want to have, don't care.
Don't care.
Not being stuck behind, I have so many clients like this who don't want to be stuck behind a desk 40 hours a week. Must have, don't.
I don't want to be stuck behind a desk for 40 hours a week.
Travel. Must have, a lot of travel. Don't want to have much travel at all. Don't care.
Must. Yeah, I like travel.
By the way, there are different kinds of travel. There's some people who like, you know, not being behind a desk, traveling to different offices around the, you know, area.
Yeah,
but others
I like
who,
moving around. I don't like to be stuck all day in the same place.
Of course, there's the long-distance type travel also. Some people love or hate flying around to different parts of the country or even parts of the world. So that's just another factor. Okay, more of these values. Heavily uses a particular ability, knowledge, or skill. Must have, don't want to have, don't care.
No, must have.
Okay, what's your particular ability, knowledge, or skill you want to use?
Everything I know about education from decades of experience.
Right. Okay. Addressing a particular societal problem or problem that people have, must have, don't care, in the middle.
In the middle.
Okay. And again, some of you dear listeners may have a particular problem you want to address, whether it be anything from autism to capitalism to whatever. Okay. I'm bringing up the capitalism thing because it seems to be ever accelerating in an era of Donald Trump. I think it's accelerated the hatred of our system. Next, a prestigious occupation. Even though the training's long, competition for good jobs fierce, prestige is important to you. Is that a must? We want the opposite of prestige, or either way?
That's not important.
Okay. Ethical work and an ethical employer.
That's must have.
Okay. Having much autonomy, where you have control over much of what you do, when you do it, how you do it. Must have. Right. Being an expert at something. Is that a must have, where you're the expert, you don't want to be the expert, or something in the middle?
Say that one again.
Being an expert. Is that something you want to make sure, you want to be an expert on your job? That's really important.
I don't know that I want to be an expert. I certainly want to be good at my job.
Okay. Next.
All right.
The work involves being on a cutting edge of some sort. Is that a must for you? You want to not be on the cutting edge, or don't care?
Don't care.
Often requiring artistic creativity. You want your job to often require artistic creativity?
God help us, no.
Okay.
That's got to be a no.
Okay. Often requiring intellectual creativity in problem solving.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, dear listener, this is not me asking Barbara. I'm asking Barbara again just to have somebody on the line to do this with. It's for you. So, something that ends up being a non-negotiable important for you, that's what I want you to be doing, is writing those down. Okay. Having a lot of variety in your daily tasks, where you're not doing one thing all day, you're doing 15.
Must have.
Okay.
Must have.
All right. That you're spending much of the workday persuading people. Must have, don't want to have, in the middle.
In the middle.
Have spending much of the workday planning with people.
Yeah, I like that. Must have.
Much of the workday supervising people.
No, don't want to do. Well, I guess I sort of do that. Don't want to do that.
Okay.
It's in the middle.
Okay. Spending much of your workday healing people.
Healing people.
Mentally or physically, yeah.
In the middle.
Okay. Much of the workday producing or reviewing data.
Oh, no.
Much of the workday building or fixing something. Hands
no.
On.
No.
Right. Much of the workday risk-taking, physical or financial risk-taking.
No.
Right. I know. Right meaning I know you. Right. Much of the workday being detail-oriented, being accurate with the details.
No.
Much of the workday in leadership.
I don't know exactly what that means, but yes.
Means expressing visions, motivating the troops, speaking externally
to
large
yes.
audiences.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
yeah. Okay, yes.
Right. Where you would need to get significant additional education, would that be a must in your career? You really would love to go back to school for another degree, would hate to go back to school for another degree, or neutral?
I don't want to get another degree. I don't mind learning things. So, neutral.
And now we move from to the workload. X number of hours per week, say 50, you know, X is, let's say your ideal work week is 48 hours. Is that a must? Must have, you know, something quite close to 48 hours or 50 hours? Don't want to have a workload like that, or you don't really care? We're very flexible about the number of hours a week you work.
I'm pretty flexible.
Okay. Commuting hours per week. Is that a non-negotiable? Must have a commute that's less than X? It would be, you know, you...
Yeah, I think I've commuted so much of my life, I'm sort of done with that.
Right. A job where you get to learn a lot on the job. Is that a must? Is it a nice to have,
yes.
or you don't care?
No, that's a must.
Modest productivity expectation, where it is you're not expected to be that productive. Is it really important to you that there isn't pressure to be very productive, or would you hate that and you'd love to have a maximum productivity pressure, or it's in the middle?
No, I want to be very productive.
Okay. A low stress workplace. Some people really love a low stress job. Other people hate a low stress job. Some people it's in the middle or it's not that critical. How about you?
Not that critical.
Flexible schedule, where you don't have to show up at 8 or 9 in the morning every day. You have got some flexibility in your hours of when you show up. Is that a must? Don't want flexibility?
Well, it's really nice, but you can't always have that.
But so would be an... Okay. Income. Some people are all about big money. Other people, they really don't care. From them, or people are working mainly just to keep busy. They've got a spouse or whatever who's supporting them. How important is income? You know, probably you don't even have to answer that. There's no reason. But, you know, that's clearly a factor for some people. It's clearly critical for some people. And it's not important for others. So, but dear listener, ask yourself, how important is the money factor? Some people, the next one as well, you know, would be commission-based or bonus-heavy-based compensation. Would you like to have a career where your pay is pay on performance, or would much rather have it not?
Either way.
Okay. Having full benefits, really important, don't want benefits, or in the middle?
I think that's really important today.
For you. Again, we're talking about you, and again, your listeners, these are all individual. This is not a test where there's right or wrong. This is an inventory to help you identify what's important to you. Job security. How important is job security? Was that a must-have? Don't care at all about it?
Well, personally, today at this point, it's not a must-have at all, but it would have been
right.
a few decades ago.
Physically attractive workspace. Must-have, don't care, in the middle.
It's not a must-have, but it's nice.
Okay, so that's it. Those are all the questions on my career values inventory. Hopefully, dear listeners, it will help you identify... what's important to you, and whether maybe you should even change jobs if you're missing some of those musts. And I know, Barbara, you want to get off the phone, so I'm going to let you get off now, and I will see you
okay.
at 1:15 at the Starbucks, as we agreed.
Okay. Very
right.
good.
I love
Thanks.
You. Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay. Now, coming full circle to where we were, I had said that we were going to span the prestige spectrum from worker bees, followers, to waitresses, restaurant servers, making it gender neutral, but also super geniuses. And there is this book of mine at play. And I was explaining that there's this guy, Claude Shannon, who's considered as eminent as Albert Einstein and Isaac Newton. He was really the father of artificial intelligence. And there's this new biography, Mind at Play, in which they identified some of the lessons for all of us that could be learned from the way a super genius lived his life. I won't have all the time I wish I had, but the first lesson is what they say is cull your inputs. Shannon's colleagues expected to find his door closed. He worked at Bell Labs. Expected to find his door closed, even though Bell Labs had a generally open door culture. And none of Shannon's colleagues remembered him as being rude or unfriendly, but they do remember him as someone who valued his privacy and quiet time for thinking. On the other hand, colleagues who would come to Shannon with a bold new idea or a fascinating engineering puzzle would remember him spending hours of productive conversations with them. So, as just to say that Shannon, as is in so much else of what he did, was very deliberate about how he invested his time in stimulating ideas, not in small talk. I have time for one more. He said, don't just find a mentor. Allow yourself to be mentored. Of course, mentors matter, but it's not that simple. Making the most of mentorship doesn't just require the confidence to approach somebody great. It requires the humility to take that guidance to heart, even when it's uncomfortable, challenging, or counterintuitive. The third thing was to consider this is from this book, Mind at Play. They said that Shannon considered the content of his friendships. He had an air of aloofness or impatience. And here's a quote from the book. He never argued his ideas. If people didn't believe in them, he ignored them. And then the book continues to say, it says, there's a fine line between arrogance and serene self-confidence. Shannon generally stayed on the right side of the line because he had the intellectual resources to back up his confidence. But he also spent his time cultivating those resources, those intellectual resources, because he was never caught up in jockeying for status, playing office politics. The pleasure of problem solving was worth more to him than all that. And so when it came time to choose his relatively small number of friends, he deliberately chose people who took pleasure in the same things, who helped bring out the best in him. Shannon and his friends, yeah, they had casual moments, but their share of fun. But they spent mostly time talking about serious and heady things. They didn't bond by talking about the weather. They bonded by anyway. So that was the point. It's one of his major things is choosing who you spend your time with, and that's true for all of us. There's much more. I wish we had more time, but we don't. That is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator Joanne Marr, and of course all of you for listening and calling in. Next Sunday, I have learned that short answers to hard questions are going to do more good than tomes. So I'm going to take some really hard career questions and try to give short answers to them and, of course, do a lot more workovers on you, my dear listeners. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko for Barbara Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
Go to MartyNemko.com for the